Iraq, out of Afghanistan, out of Pakistan, it's all connected together, and the strategy is we hate the West, get them out. But this group is representative of a very small portion of those of the Islamic faith, and they have bastardized that faith.
Indeed, I think there are no truer words that have been spoken thus far. To what extent, though, is this tactic attached to that overarching strategy? Does it in any way fulfill that strategy, do you think?
Well, I believe that the strategy, it could be a double-edged sword, because finally, what we're seeing is Islamic voices interceding and trying to say, stop this, this is wrong. Remember, when they attacked in Saudi Arabia at the first of the month, and then they attacked in Khobar, when they made those original attacks, they attacked foreign workers, many of whom were Islamic. They then got a lot of retribution from the Islamic community. Then they shifted and specifically started focusing only on Westerners, and they have adapted. Now they are receiving retribution from folks within the Saudi community, because Saudi Arabia is at a conflict, and Islam is in a conflict with itself between Sunni and Shiite groups, between Shiite and Shiite groups.
So what you're saying, what you're suggesting here, Ken, is that they have gone too far. There's the potential for a real backlash, and this could completely backfire, undermining the strategy of this narrow minority of Islam.
Well, it's clear that they are not all together cooperating. When they chopped off the head of Nicholas Berg,
this nonsense about the Islamic voices are finally interceding with people chopping off good old Americans' heads. Yeah, it's interceding all right. The intersection is that they need to chop off more heads. Then you babble off that what we see now is a conflict in Saudi Arabia and a conflict of Islam. The only conflict that's going on is what's the best way to get this demon out of our backyards. And that's something, well, believe me, I got a few ideas. Hey, Reg, where does Boy George live? You know what time it is. Listening to 104.1, 101.1 Santa Cruz, 106.7 Illinois, LUVER.com, the world, slave revolt time. Tonight, we're going to deal with good Negro, bad Negro, Bill Cosby style, and kind of mix it in with a historical film, The Soldier's Story. You'll be able to work it out from there on a Beyond the Shadow segment. And then Joe will be doing the Making It Plain News update. And then if we have time, we'll shoot our way into a commentary. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 104.1. Slave Revolt.
Who's ever drove you in from the station? Showed you the spot where the killing took place? Told you it had all the proof, personal effects, search for weapons? He tell you all that?
Is there a point the colonel is trying to make, sir?
There's a point. This thing's been blowing all the hell out of shape. It's the army business. Not the NAACP, not the Negro Press, not those paper-shuffling desk jockeys in Washington. I was brought up in the South, Davenport. You ever hear of Threadgill County, Alabama?
No, sir.
No matter. I've been commanding colored troops all my life, Davenport. The worst thing you can do in this part of the country is pay too much attention to the death of a Negro under mysterious circumstances. Especially a soldier. People get itchy, uneasy. White folk in the town, colored at the fort. Keep turning this thing over. Sooner or later, you're bound to have an explosion. Now, I've lived here in Hunter Parish 3 years. I'm fond of the place. I like the duty. You get my meaning?
What is it you want, Colonel?
I want whatever it is you came here to do completed in 3 days.
Sir, I request immediate permission to notify Washington.
Permission denied.
I'm under direct order.
I don't give a damn if Roosevelt himself sent you, Davenport. I'm trying to prevent my colored troops from going into that backwater town and killing somebody. And I don't care what you think. You can always return to Washington if you like.
No, sir. I was assigned this case, and I intend to file a report. Sir.
Hear your instructions and I report. Captain Taylor's man has helped get set up. Taylor was water CO. That'll be all, Davenport.
Oh, and, Captain, remember, you're the first colored officer most of these men ever seen. The Army expects you to set an example for the colored troops. Be credit to your race. Is that clear, Captain?
Yes, Colonel.
Everywhere. I was right. Everything I knew was wrong.
You see, where they've gone, they're playing with the universe. They're playing with the solar system. Amount of energy that's going to flow out from that light off is going to do to the rest of the planets in the solar system.
You know what time it is now. Beyond the shadow. You know, a little while ago, the little entertainer, Bill Cosby, made some comments about the black underclass primarily, about them not holding up their end of the deal. And I'm going to deal with this in my own eclectic slave revolt way. And, have you go with us through a widely known movie that has many of those same types of sentiments laced in the movie. The movie was none other than The Soldier's Story. And this deals with black soldiers during World War II who were basically on the base at that time. The black soldiers had not been given the okay to go fight in World War II in this particular scenario. and there had been a killing of a black sergeant by the name of Walters, who actually represents Bill Cosby. So we'll just call him Sergeant Bill Cosby Walters. And Walters' attitude towards the Southern blacks, who he looks upon them as being backwards and Geechee and an embarrassment to the overall black race, is very similar to the modern day Bill Cosby Walters, who talks about the urban poor being backwards and so on and so forth. And we're going to deal with what that really means to be considered backwards and so on and so forth in a market economic order, and who the real Geechee is, so to speak. Now, we're going to have to skip certain passages because actual quotes from Cosby himself were supposed to be read, but it didn't work out. So what we'll deal with is what he basically said was, the urban poor aren't holding up their end of the deal, that they can't speak English correct, and other things that basically said that the urban poor are an embarrassment, and so on and so forth. Well, let's deal with the Bill Cosby character, known as Sergeant Walters, as he outlines his image of how the spit and polish Negro in America should be. So check this out, and we'll take it from there. Take this.
Hey, you're a non-commissioned officer in the army of a country at war. The penalty for being drunk on duty is severe seat time. So don't bring me no folk. Colored folks can't do nothing unless they drunk shit as an excuse. You're supposed to be an example to your men. I'm gonna put you in the stockade for 10 days and take them goddamn strikes.
Now wait a minute, Sergeant.
Teach you a lesson. You're in the army. Colored folks always running off at the mouth about what they're gonna do if the white man give them a chance. You get it? And what do you do with it? You wind up drunk on guard duty. I don't blame the white man. Why the hell should he put colored and white together in this war? You can't even be trusted to guard your own quarters.
Now wait a minute, Sergeant.
Where's your pride, soldier? Where's your respect for this uniform? Get out of my sight, private.
How was he with the other men?
Sometimes the Southern guys caught hell. Sergeant wasn't too big on guys from the South.
All right, so what you basically can do, as you hear part of the opening scenes, is Sergeant Bill Cosby Walters strips the stripes off of another soldier because of him being drunk. But he parallels it to, a collective guilt thing of black folks, you know, can't achieve, and he doesn't blame the white man for not putting black soldiers with white ones because we're not holding up our end of the deal, so on and so forth. Of course, ignoring the whole overall historical structural situations and foundations of white supremacy, slavery, Jim Crow, and everything else. The segregation of black soldiers had nothing to do with the lack of confidence. White soldiers had to admit that since the Civil War, when 200,000 black soldiers whipped ass on the South. And Lincoln himself admitted that that was the defining moment when the black soldiers picked up the gun. That was the turning point. So as far as black competence, as far as soldiering is concerned in this country, that's just a recycling down master's fables of how the world works. But next, let's go to Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters. Sergeant Waters, describe his plans for his kid and how he sees his kid making it in the world today. Check it out.
Letting the neighbor take this just a couple of weeks ago. Now, Army's not for my son. See, when this war's over, things are gonna change. I want him to be ready for it. I'm sending some big white college. Let him rub elbows with the whites. Learn the white man's language, how he does things.
Oh, white don't rub off.
Well, what are we gonna do? Stay behind and everything? Hell, you can see it in the Army. White man running rings around us.
A lot of us ain't have a chance than white boys have, Sarge.
Oh, that ain't no excuse. My daddy shoveled coal from the back of a wagon all his life. Couldn't read or write, but he saw to it that we did. Now, not having is no excuse for not getting it.
Then get pee from a tree, Sarge.
You just like the rest of them, Wookie. Ignorant. Scared. Stop thinking like a nigger.
Take it easy, Colonel.
All I said.
Is the equipment ready for tomorrow's game?
No.
Then see that it gets ready. As to the war, gents.
To the war.
As you see, once again, the Bill Cosby character, Sergeant Waters, his idea of making it is basically not confronting institutionalized racism and the whole structure that exists, and not even challenging the capitalist system, not questioning these wars that black and white soldiers find themselves continuously being catapulted in. It's all about this generic form of integrating into the system. It's similar to last week when I did the thing on the old hocus pocus man from South Africa, the white ANC guy who is just so happy that apartheid is gone, even though apartheid policies through the economic order are still in place. So, well, one, under his outlook, could say, well, legal segregation is gone, and we're now able to integrate into the system because of it. Yet, whites, 4% of the population, controlling 80% of the land, tells you that there's something else going on. But if you're a Cosby-type figure, you're not going to tackle those economic orders that deal with intentionally segregating people out, intentionally creating ethnic divisions, intentionally dividing people within the working class amongst each other, and continuously generating and regenerating poverty. So as you heard from Sergeant Waters, the Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters, all he was talking about was his kids learning the white man's language, you know, and it's time to stop thinking like a nigger, you know. Now, think about it. We have a lot of Negroes now who have learned quite well the quote-unquote white man's language. We see them all on the TV now. And what are they doing? They're perpetuating the imperial philosophy and domination of the world. You got a situation where you have Condoleezza Rice and all of them. If you were to ask the average Iraqi person who is more of a detriment to their well-being, some brother on the street in East Oakland or Condoleezza Rice, i.e., in Bill Cosby's terms, the poor Geechee, the one on the streets who's poor, or from my perspective, the educated Geechee, Condoleezza Rice, well, it's clear who's causing more problems. The Condoleezza Rices of the world. But see, that's not where Bill Cosby is coming from. But let's hear for ourselves a well-educated Negro Geechee talk at the 9-1-1 hearings about what her master's administration knew about the Ikeda cells and the warnings about those cells taking place in America. And you'll see what I mean. Check this out.
Big knowledge to us in your interview of February 7, 2004, that Richard Clark told you that Al-Qaeda cells were in the United States. Did you tell the president at any time prior to August 6 of the existence of Al-Qaeda cells in the United States?
First, let me just make certain...
If you could just answer that question,
first,
because I only have a very limited...
I understand, Commissioner, but it's important that I also address... It's also important, Commissioner, that I address the other issues that you have raised. So I will do it quickly, but if you'll just give me a moment...
Well, my only question to you is whether you
I understand,
told
Commissioner,
the president...
But I will, if you'll just give me a moment, I will address fully the questions that you've asked. First of all, yes, the August 6th PDB was in response to questions of the president. In that sense, he asked that this be done. It was not a particular threat report. And there was historical information in there about various aspects of Al-Qaeda's operations. Dick Clark had told me, I think in a memorandum, I remember it as being only a line or two, that there were Al-Qaeda cells in the United States. Now, the question is, what did we need to do about that? And I also understood that that was what the FBI was doing, that the FBI was pursuing these Al-Qaeda cells. I believe in the August 6th memorandum, it says that there were 70 full field investigations underway of these cells. And so there was no recommendation that we do something about this. The FBI was pursuing it. I really don't remember, Commissioner, whether I discussed this with the president. I
Thank you.
Remember very well that the president was aware that there were issues inside the United States. He talked to people about this, but I don't remember the Al-Qaeda cells as being something that we were told we needed to do something about.
Isn't it a fact, Dr. Rice, that the August 6th PDB warned against possible attacks in this country? And I ask you whether you recall the title of that PDB.
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States.
Okay, so here you have this Negrette. Now, amongst the Cosbys of the world, this is not a degenerate Negro. Even though she has worked hoof and hoof with the empire in disinformation and helping plunge the planet into a war and chaos, she has helped unleash the most barbaric military on the planet that doesn't even hesitate to throw depleted uranium around the planet. Helped unleash this on a people who have already been under the gun and sanctions for over 10 years. Now, within, once again, Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters' construct, this is not the Negro that's an embarrassment. Now, for many conscious black people, Condoleezza Rice getting up there like she just did buffooning, that is an embarrassment. When you have 95% of the black population in America, as a poll just read, who believes that this country is headed in the wrong direction, I would say that the mandate on moral principles concerning war and things of that action is still deeply rooted within the black consciousness on the level of what is just and what is not. But what Cosby wants to do is once again turn it to the poor and talk about lower economic people buying $500 sneakers and not wanting to spend it on $200 material for Hooked on Phonics. Now, of course, he's not going to even question why these sneakers cost that much and how, in actuality, they cost less than $15, like Nikes, to make in China. Yet, they pump it up to hundreds of dollars once they get across the sea. And when I say less than $15, that's to produce them and to ship them. So how is this industrial base, how did this industrial base leave these shores in the first place? And was that an instrument of class warfare in the from the ruling class? See, Cosby's not going to take on those aspects of why an American-made shoe is being made out of the country, and why are they finding their way in high repression, low-wage zones, and how are they kept in these low-wage zones, like the terrorist efforts of the School of the Americas? And what perpetuates the poverty when, one, you're uprooting indigenous people off of their natural way of life and putting them in these subhuman, you know, cattle prod work factories for Nike and Levi Strauss, and then you're deindustrializing the zones in urban America. See, there's nothing about that. It's just all about the lack of moral values that is existing within black people, at that poor black people. Educated geeches like Condoleezza Rice, who are perpetuating the real violence, the Negro has virtually nothing to say. And that's the aspect that really needs to be dealt with.
As you proceed with this line of thought, we're going to see that that sergeant, there's a strong dose of self-hate in some of this.
Of course.
You know, and I think we're going to...
Well, we haven't got to that yet.
Okay.
Now, next, after all the exposure of the educated Geechee here, here we have Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters, Sergeant Waters, who explodes at Negroes for hip-hopping, or back then it was called the blues. So let's hear them do their little thing and see how Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters explodes at them for embarrassing the race and other things. Check this out.
Knock it off. You don't need no more of that guitar picking sitting around the shack music today, CJ. I want all you men out of those baseball uniforms and into work clothes. You report to me at $1,600. We got a work detail. Paint in the lobby of the officers' club.
Why can't those officers paint their own club?
Oh, hell no, Small. Let the great colored cleanup company do it. Our motto is anything you don't want to do, the colored troops will do for you. Anything you don't want to do, the colored troops will do for you.
Anything you don't want to do, the colored troops will do for you. Anything you don't want to do, the colored troops will do for you.
Let me tell all you fancy-ass ball-playing Negroes something. The reasons for any orders given by a superior officer is none of y'all's business. You obey them. This country is at war. And you niggas are soldiers. Nothing else. And something else. From now on, when I tell you to do something, I want it done. Is that clear?
Yes, sir!
Now get out of those baseball uniforms. I could smell you suckers before I hit the door.
And what kind of colored man are you?
I'm a soldier, Peterson. And the kind of colored man that don't like lazy, shiftless Negroes.
Well, sir, you ain't got to come in here calling us names.
The Nazis called you Schwarzer.
You gonna complain to Hitler they hurt your little feelings?
It don't look like to me we could do too much to them nasty with paintbrushes, Doc.
You trying to mock me, CJ?
No, sir.
Good. Because whatever an ignorant, low-class geechee like you has to say ain't worth paying attention to. Is it?
Yeah. Is it?
I recognize, sir.
You a creep, Waters.
Sir, just joking, Pete. He don't mean no harm.
No, he does. I mean, we're taking her from them white boys.
Yes, you do. And if it wasn't for you southern niggas, white folks wouldn't think we was all fools.
Well, where are you from? England?
Okay. Looks like we got us a wise-ass Alabama boy here. Yes, sir. Now, don't you get smart, nigga.
Get your fucking hands off me!
You want to hit old Sergeant Waters, boy? Come on. Please. Come on, nigga!
Tear top!
At ease. Oh, what's going on here, Sergeant?
Nothing, sir. I was going over some batting techniques, sir. Is there something in particular you wanted? Something I could do, sir?
No, nothing. I just wanted to congratulate you men on the game you won today. Now, the way I figure it, only 7 more, and we'll be the first colored team in Army history to play the Yankees.
Clarence is counting on you.
Sergeant.
As far as I'm concerned, these men can have the rest of the day off.
Excuse me, sir. These men don't need any time off. They need all the work they can get. Our fellows in North Africa aren't getting any time off. Besides, sir, we have orders to report for a paint detail at $1,600.
And who issued that order?
Major Harris, sir.
Well, I'll speak to the major.
Sir. I don't think it's such a good idea to have a colored NCO mixed up in the middle of you officers, sir.
I said I'd speak to him, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Memphis. Not that catch you made in center field today. How in the hell did you get up that high?
They say I got a bird in my blood, sir.
Well, I hope it's American Eagle.
No, sir. Crow. See, a man told my daddy the day I was born. See, the boy got the shot of a crow when he hit the chest.
That's fine. Men? Played a great game today. Sergeant?
Okay, sir.
Carry on.
How long a story was you going to tell the man there, CJ? Peterson. Oh, I ain't forgot you, boy. Time to teach you a lesson. Okay.
Stop!
Go outside and make sure everything is set up.
You want all the NCOs?
I'm going outside and wait for you, Geechee. When you come out, I'm going to whoop your black southern ass. Let the whole company watch, too. You need to learn respect for these stripes.
So once again, you see Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters storm in and attack the uneducated Geechee of the day. Back then, it was the Southern Geechee that, you know, he was embarrassed by and mocked. You heard him talk to C.J. Memphis, you know, who was, you know, into all of this kind of country-fied stuff. And then when Peterson, who was played by Denzel Washington, stands up for him, Bill Cosby Waters can't take it and now wants to challenge him to a fight. But if you listen to what Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters had to say, you know, everything that was coming out of his mouth towards the black soldiers was degrading stuff. It had nothing to do with, look, we got a common struggle, we have a common dignity, and we could, if united, overcome many of these barriers, which if you like listen to the piece I did a few weeks ago on the War Cry segment, it had a black World War II soldier who had fought. And he talked about how they were given the worst meat, you know, like rat-infested meat, and how a Nazi actually came up to him years after the war and said, I fought in that same war, and I was at the same camp you were, and we as Nazis who were prisoners of war were treated better than you black soldiers in the U.S. Imagine that. A Nazi prisoner of war was treated better by U.S. white troops than black U.S. soldiers. Now, see, you gotta have some lack of self-dignity and self-respect to play the Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters character. You know, to talk all of this degrading stuff and then try to once again blame it on the poor. So what does he say to the C.J. Memphis character, the, you know, countrified cat? If it wasn't for you Southern niggas, white folks wouldn't be thinking we were all fools. So just like the modern Cosby, Cosby's basically saying if it wasn't for you poor niggas, white folks wouldn't be thinking we all degenerate and couldn't speak English correct. So you have the past Cosby and the current Cosby embarrassed by the quote-unquote uneducated Geechee. Meanwhile, they're perpetuating educated Geecheeism by, one, wholeheartedly accepting the system, uncritically accepting the system, being beholden to a white racist power structure without any question. You know, however Master wants to lay it out, you just gotta play his game, man. Get educated by him. I'ma get my kid educated. You heard him. You heard him. I'ma send my kid to rub elbows with the white folks. You know, soon he'll be dropping bombs on the Japanese too. You know, that's how the Bill Cosby Waters character is constructed. So this shows the parallels of the current Bill Cosby, entertainer, and the Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters character of a World War II fame. And it parallels who they are angry at and who they are not. And this is how you can have the most degenerate things being done to black people within this white racist society. And you have Cosby make statements like black people who are being gunned down by the cops. These aren't political criminals. These are, they're going around stealing coca and Coca-Cola and getting shot in the back of the head and so on and so forth. In other words, he's just blaming the victims and ignoring. Was Abner Louima stealing a can of Coca-Cola? Were the prisoners in Chicago who were being electrocuted by John Burge in their genitals and ears, were they stealing Coca-Cola as they were being tortured? And if they were stealing a can of Coca-Cola, was it worth it? Does the quote-unquote crime fit the brutality? When you have 10% of a black population in Tyler, Texas, all rounded up off the false claim of one thug punk cop, and that 10% of the black population is railroaded off the prison, and they're all supposed to be kingpin drug dealers, even 80-year-olds supposed to be kingpin. They ain't got a dime to their name. Was that for stealing a can of Coca-Cola, Cosby? See, this is how warped these types of educated Geechees are. They'll scream all day about some poor disenfranchised black folks, yet open the flood doors for these charlatans who are running amok, these colon cancer pals, Condoleezza Rices, these Negroes who are flooding or trying to flood in to Supreme Court justices like Clarence Thomas's, only to do Mass's bidding. Look, Clarence Thomas used to go under a program where he said that the reason why he was against things like abortion is because he believed in natural law. And since abortion was against the law of nature, that's why he was against abortion. I said, okay, well, we'll see about this, Negro. We'll see where your principles really lie, which is already pretty obvious. But then an interesting thing happened because he was working at the EEOC. And a number of women who were pregnant were getting sick at a factory. And they asked the corporation to put in their proper ventilation system. And the CEOs at the corporation said, no, if you want to continue to work here, you guys got to sterilize yourself. So they said, well, look, that's just ridiculous. You know, you guys should just put in a natural... To make a long story short, they battled it, and it went all the way to the EEOC, where Clarence Thomas was heading at the time. Clarence Thomas ruled in the favor of the CEO, saying that the women wanted to continue to work there, they would have to sterilize themselves. Now, in reality, that looks like a contradiction to Clarence Thomas's position on natural law, because if it's unnatural for a woman to have an abortion, it's also unnatural for them to sterilize themselves. But the reality is Thomas isn't pro-abortion, anti-abortion. He's whatever Massa tells him to be. That's the reality. Whatever tune Massa tells him to be, that's what he tap dances to. That's what it means to be an educated Negro, an educated Geechee, the type that Bill Cosby Waters likes. Now, when it comes to respect, those stripes, you know, how, you know, we're supposed to respect the stripes, as you heard Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters say in the Soldier Story movie. Let's see how much honor those stripes really hold when these educated Geechees actually got them pinned on themselves. Here's what I mean. So check this out.
And these reports are true about Mr. Johnson. We, of course, totally condemn this action. It's an action of barbarism, an action that shows once again what the world is dealing with these kinds of individuals who would behead somebody or murder somebody in cold blood, an innocent individual who's just trying to help people, trying to do his job. And if anything, it will cause us, and I'm quite confident it will cause our Saudi colleagues, redouble our efforts to go after terrorists wherever they are, wherever they're trying to hide, and to go after those who support this kind of terrorist activity. And so waiting to hear more from Saudi Arabia. Thoughts are with Mr. Johnson's family. They have shown a great deal of courage during this trying time, this difficult time for them, and my thoughts are with them, our thoughts are with them, and we're waiting to get the final confirmations. Thank you.
First of all, to the Johnson family, Colon Cancer Pile doesn't give a damn about your departed, you know, son, husband, whatever. The other reality is that his ass shouldn't have been over there. So, I mean, hey, you know, Sam has helped put a bullseye on Westerners' heads all over the planet. If you're walking around in fairy tale land and have some kind of John Wayne image and vision of the world, that you're out here to help settle the new frontiers, and you get your ass shot off like some of them settlers got their ass shot off by crazy horsing them, well, see ya. But this is also what I mean. You just heard from Colon Cancer Pyle. And Colon Cancer Pyle is adored by the Bill Cosbys of the world, the educated Geechees. Actually, the Bill Cosbys of the world turn to poor blacks and others and say that that's the type of Negro that we should emulate. Good dialect, good education, mass murderer. You know, you fighting for the U.S. Empire? That's what you are. But a Bill Cosby does not question the murder record and that the blood of Vietnam kids and Iraqi kids is still wet on the hands of colon cancer. Why doesn't Bill Cosby question this? It's because that's not what Bill Cosby questions. He does not question the policy and the conduct of Master overall in world affairs. His questioning of black people is, are we, quote unquote, holding up our end of the bargain, which is to tap dance on Master's plantation with good diction. Now next, we hear from, again, Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters, his contempt, not for the polished Colin Powell, but for the uneducated Geechee. And you can see this contempt seething. Check it out.
He's the kind of boy seems innocent, Boogie. Got everybody on the post thinking he's a strong black buck. White boys envy his strength, his speed, power in his swing. And this colored champion lets those same white boys call him Shine Sambo.
Voila!
He just smiles. Can't talk. Can barely read or write his own name. Don't care. You tell you they like him. But it, colored folks ain't supposed to have but so much sense. You know the damage one ignorant Negro can do. We were in France in the First War. We had won decorations. But the white boys had told all them French gals that we had tails. Then they found this ignorant colored soldier. Paid him to tie a tail to his ass and run around half naked making monkey sounds. They put him on a big round table in the Café Napoleon. Put a reed in his hand. Crown on his head, blanket on his shoulders, and made him eat bananas in front of all them Frenchies. Oh, the white boys danced that night. Passed out leaflets with that boy's picture on it. Called him Moonshine, King of the Monkeys. And when we slit his throat, you know that fool asked us what he had done wrong. Daddy told me we got to turn our backs on this kind, will we? Close our ranks to the chitlins, collard greens, cornbread style. We are men, soldiers. And I don't intend for our race to be cheated out of its place of honor and respect in this war because of fools like CJ. You watch everything he does. Everything.
Now, if you listen closely, you heard Sergeant Bill Cosby Walters talk about he doesn't he's not going to hear about black people being left out of their place for respect in this war because of fools like C.J. Memphis, you know, the poor Geechee, the Southern Geechee. Now, if you think about it, World War II ended, and it had nothing to do with some poor Geechees from the South that black people still didn't get their respect. Black people still had to organize, and much of it came from the South, from those poor Geechies he's condemning and stuff. So, since he's so warped on the class angle and is so much into integrating unconditionally onto Massa's plantation, please, Massa, please accept me. He has this a distorted view of himself and the world and what this whole situation is really all about. You know, this isn't about black people have not shown themselves to be capable, industrious men and women, and this is why these white folks haven't given us respect. This is about class, power, and terror used to super exploitate a particular group of people. So he then talked about, you know, the one ignorant Geechee, and it was an ignorant Geechee running around making monkey sounds and letting white folks put a tail on him and so on and so forth. But what's kind of interesting is that, you know, many of these pathetic movies you see out now, which are basically coon movies, these soul planes and all of that stuff. What's fascinating is many of these movies are being made by, you know, middle class and up black folks who have bought into the just get paid philosophy. You know, because, see, basically, they came in with an ideology that Hollywood doesn't really see black or white. It just sees green. That's bull. And now they've gotten into a situation where many of them have willingly, they've been told to, but they willingly conceded into taking out many of the political contents that were first coming into movies when there was like a revival of black cinema, you know, with Spike Lee and, you know, the Hughes brothers and all of them were coming, you know, Boys in the Hood. A lot of them, even if they were movies in the hood, they tried to add some social content. Now it's just coon it up. And many of these directors and writers come from the segment of the population that Bill Cosby considers educated Geechees. He doesn't call them Geechees, but I mean, they're Condoleezza Rices. They're just in Hollywood and stuff. And there was recently an article in like Premiere Magazine where they wanted to discuss race in Hollywood, and they found that they were calling up all of these directors and a number black directors, and many of them wouldn't even discuss it. They refused to discuss race. And people like Ice Cube, when they wanted to discuss about a barbershop, they wouldn't even call back. So it's now to the point where these educated Geechees don't even want to discuss these subject matters. Because if they really express themselves in how black people are being pimped, then they're scared they'll never get a deal again. Now, you've had a couple of movies where black people have tried to address this. One was Spike Lee's Bamboozled. And then there was another, it was like a HBO movie. It was quite good. It was called Dancing in September, which basically dealt with a young black woman who was trying to be a writer for, you know, sitcoms. And when she first gets into it, she's part of a staff, and she's telling the people on the staff, hey, you know, black people don't act like this. Why do you have them cooning so much? And she finds herself on the outs because she is relentless on standing on her principles. And then she's clearly on the out because she has a label on herself. So then she relents, and she describes to the method that you hear many Negro police do. You can't change things unless you get on the inside. You know, the whole rock the vote message. You got to be a player to make the plays, you know. So she decides she's going to, you know, accommodate white stereotypes and racisms and basically, you know, buffoon her writing up a little bit. She ends up getting a show. She gets a show, and as the show progresses, you go through her whole experience, as she has to buffoon up the characters even more so, to the point where it's not even close to being recognizable for any black person who has a grandmother or a mother or a father. I mean, it's just straight up coonized. And it just goes through this whole process. And, you know, the movie's called Dancing in September. But what my whole point is even her character is like this very educated, middle-class black woman who has a certain principles, but her principle primarily is get paid. And then everything else is justified. If I can get in the door, and she goes through this with her black boyfriend, who is like, he gets an executive position at the studio. And he's also supposed to try to change it from the inside. At the end of the day, it comes down to ratings, taking any type of social content out, and what do you have? Just another show on UPN that you can see. So this is how sick a lot of this type of stuff is when you have a people who have as rich of a history as we do, who have gone through so many of the crucial, important historical changes and shifts and dynamics. And if you look on TV, you don't see anything about black people where it's centered around black people other than sitcoms. Dancing, not in September, but Dancing on the Plantation. Now, next, here's another educated Geechee, the kind that Cosby likes, responding to, should the Democrats try another strategy on how Democrats and why Democrats can't write off the South? So let's see what this educated Geechee has to say, and we'll take it from there. Dig this.
You can't write off the South. First of all, you look at the Southern vote. This kind of anti-Martin Luther King backlash is the new Southern race strategy, in some sense led by people like Trent Lott, by President Reagan.
Gingrich.
The point was that Martin Luther King has changed the South, changed our way of life, and we've got to sit with them and go to school with them, and that they even got the right to vote against these political positions. So the movement of the kind of anti-Martin Luther King civil rights struggle was to play into the fears of the whites. Reagan's speech in Philadelphia, Mississippi, 1980, was, we are back. For the signal, we are back. And in some sense, the kind of anti-civil rights drove many whites into voting their racial fears and pain against their economic interests. I said to 8,000 pillow ticks workers in Kannapolis, North Carolina, a few months ago, they were weeping because they went to work one day and the plant was closed. And when the plant closed, jobs gone, no benefits, movie houses closed, can't pay the house note, can't pay the car note. Help us. I said, I want to help you, but many of you voted for Bush. I said, yeah, but we want you to help us. I said, you really got what you voted. You voted for the right to not be at the table. You voted for right to work laws. You voted for the right of the company to determine your destiny, close the plant without notice. The point is, the big challenge of the South is to keep working on getting more and more whites to vote their economic dreams and not their racial fears. Put it this way. In South Carolina last year, the race, governor's race, 300,000 blacks didn't vote in round numbers. 260,000 did vote. So more didn't than did. They lost the race by 40,000 votes. The numbers are there. In Georgia, lost the Senate race, Max Cleveland, by 30,000 votes. 600,000 blacks unregistered. So the unregistered black vote, and the emerging Southern black and brown vote, the unregistered vote, and the registered who have despaired, that combination can change the South precipitously.
Now, what's interesting about this is that here you have Jesse Jackson again talking about the unregistered black vote and how this is an anti-Martin King backlash and all of this type of stuff. The fact that an educated Geechee has the nerve to coon himself out there when 90,000 plus voters were turned away less than 5% of them actually had felonies. So all of the rest were legally, under their laws, able to vote. This was institutionalized racism at its highest order. And the fact that when black people started to organize against this in Florida at the time, and Greg Polis had broken the story before Gore had conceded, the Democratic Party was more concerned about maintaining the false integrity of the system than exposing the Republicans and the system for what it helped foment against black people. And Gore told that Negro, the educated Geechee, Jesse Jackson, to get out of town by sundown, don't help organize and stir up no mess. And that educated Geechee got out of town by sundown, just like Master said. Now you tell me, who's more of a detriment to black people? Some Negro stealing a loaf of bread, or a Negro that would align himself with a system and with a party, both parties, who intentionally allow black honest people to be to have their basic rights run down the drain? See, these Bill Cosby Negroes, these educated Geechees, these Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters are the ones who are the problem. And it's the system that they help perpetuate that keeps black people in this Klan manifest destiny atmosphere that we live in today. Now, just like the, black with a fake felony, Florida situation that happened, the Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters characters brags to C.J. Memphis, who he helped set up and send to jail. So check out how this works. In Florida, they make up a situation where all these blacks are supposed to be felons. Just like in much of America, like Tyler, Texas, they made up and ended up carting off black people to jail. Now, in the movie Soldier Story, Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters helps frame up C.J. Memphis, the Southern Geechee that he despises so much, and ends up framing him up for a crime he didn't commit, which lands C.J. in jail. Now, let's hear Bill Cosby Waters talk to C.J. about how he's proud of what he's done. After all, Massa does the same thing, basically. Check this out.
They're talking about giving you 5 years. They call what you did mutiny, boy.
That gun ain't mine.
We know that, CJ. We changed the charge on you this morning. You in here for striking a superior officer, boy. And everybody's seen it, too.
Why are you doing this to me, sir?
Oh, I don't feel too bad, CJ. Has to be this way. You see, the first war didn't change nothing for the Negro. But this one, gonna change everything. Them Nazis ain't all crazy. Whole lot of people just can't seem to fit in where things seem to be going. Like you, CJ. See, the black race can't afford you no more. Oh, there used to be a time we'd see somebody like you singing, clowning, yassa bossing, and we wouldn't do anything. Folks like that. You were good. Homie kind of nigga. When they needed somebody to mistreat, call a name or two, they paraded you. Reminded them of the good old days. Not no more. The day of the Geechee is gone, boy. And you going with it. We can't let nobody go on believing we all fools like you. Waited a long time for you, boy. A gotcha. I put two Geechees in jail in Camp Campbell, Kentucky. Three in Fort Huachuca. Now I got you. One less fool for the race to be ashamed of.
Now, as you heard Bill Cosby talking, this is Bill Cosby back in the 40s during the war. The black race can't afford you no more. You're an embarrassment to the race. You're holding us back. Not white supremacy. You're holding us back. Because you fiddle on a guitar playing country blues and you smile a lot. Now, when he talks all of this stuff about black folks being shot in modern times by these little pigs, saying these aren't political criminals, they're just going around stealing Coca-Cola cans and stuff like that. What he's basically saying is that we can't afford you poor Geechees anymore. If you all can't pull yourself up by your own bootstrap, even though Master stole them, then, well, you just got to go one way or another. And I'm going to look the other way when some roided out cop blasts you in the back of the head and ain't going to say nothing. Then, you heard him then. You just heard Bill Cosby now. It's the same game. It's the same Negro. The educated, self-hating Negro. The Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters of the 40s. And the Bill Cosby clown comedian of today. He's right about something. There are certain types of Negroes that the black race can't afford. Now next, here's one of Cosby's educated Geechees once again that we're not supposed to be ashamed of. Because, you know, they've integrated into the system, so they're doing the right thing. Let's hear this educated Geechee. Check this out.
You have indicated here that this was some historical document, and I am asking you whether it is not the case that you learned in the PDB memo of August 6th that the FBI was saying that that it had information suggesting that preparations, not historically, but ongoing, along with these numerous full-field investigations against Al-Qaeda cells, that preparations were being made consistent with hijackings within the United States.
What the August 6th PDB said, and perhaps I should read it to you.
We would be happy to have it declassified in full at this time, including its title.
I believe, Mr. Benveniste, that you've had access to this PDB.
But we have not had it declassified so that it can be shown publicly,
I believe you've had access to this PDB, exceptional access. But let me address your question.
Nor could we, prior to today, reveal the title of that PDB.
May I address the question, sir? The fact is that this August 6th PDB was in response to the president's questions about whether or not something might happen or something might be planned by Al-Qaeda inside the United States. He asked because all of the threat reporting, or the threat reporting that was actionable, was about the threats abroad, not about the United States. This particular PDB had a long section on what bin Laden had wanted to do, speculative much of it, in 97, 98, that he had in fact liked the results of the 1993 bombing. It had a number of discussion of whether or not they might use hijacking to try and free a prisoner who was being held in the United States, Rassam. It reported that the FBI had full field investigations underway. And we checked on the issue of whether or not there was something going on with surveillance of buildings, and we were told, I believe, that the issue was the courthouse in which this might take place. Commissioner, this was not a warning. This was a historical memo prepared by the agency because the president was asking questions about what we knew about the inside. Now,
well, if you are willing to declassify that document, then others can make up their minds about it.
So here you see and hear the educated Geechee. And it's not that I'm not against Geecheeism. I know how self-destructive it is. The uneducated Geecheeism that you see in our communities, where violence is often not conscious, or where you see violence just directed in a kind of a scatter type mentality, where you're on a survivalist tip and you're just, I'm out to get mine by any means, even if it's going to destroy me in the end. It's often chaotic. But the educated Geechees that you hear, like Condoleezza Rice, who's protecting Mass's empire, that's conscious violence, directed often at the most vulnerable and poor, because they're cowards. You often see that their chaos is controlled chaos. They put nice little terms to it, educated terms, shock and awe, which basically means terrorism, you know, with a depleted uranium tip attached to it. The thing is that the educated Geechees are aligned to a system that existence itself is predicated on the terror, torture, shock, awe, destruction of the masses of people throughout the planet. That's the, at essence, what it means to be an educated Geechee. But the reality is that just like the Sergeant Bill Cosby Waters character met his fate in the end, so will this Cosby, if he continues to go on that same path of drunken obedience to his master. The first Bill Cosby Waters sergeant one met it. It's real clear. So this Cosby better wake up to it, because you have a tradition of finding the bullet. Here's what I mean.
Smalls, look who's drunk on his ass, boy.
Oh, Limbeek.
No, I'm gonna enjoy this. Big bad Sergeant Waters down on his knee.
What's up, Ma? I'm gonna love it. Hey, Sarge. Need some help? Hi, B. Oh, yeah, come on now. Here we go.
Can I help him or get you, boy?
Shut up!
Some people. Hey, if this was a German, would you kill it? Huh? If it was Hitler, that fucking Tojo, would you kill him?
There's a trick to it, Peterson. It's the only way you can win. See, CJ? He could never make it. He was a clown. A clown in blackface. A nigger. Got to be like them. But the rules are fixed, and... Shh. Listen. Yeah. It's CJ.
No,
CJ. I made him do it.
But it doesn't make any difference. They still hate you.
It's justice, Moss. It's for CJ. Everybody.
They still hate you.
Thank you.
I heard you. I hope you heard those shots, Bill Cosby. Because your predecessor did. And it just goes to show that the uneducated Geechee is not always uneducated in the end. And he surely does, at the end of the day, find out who some of his true enemies are. Hold on a sec.
Brothers and sisters, and friends, and I see some enemies. In fact, I think we'd be fooling ourselves if we had an audience this large and didn't realize that there were some enemies present.
Good evening, brothers and sisters. I'm Gerald Smith, and this is your Making a Plain News service. Well, Greg and I, by association, his family won't allow it. As Republicans try to cloak President Bush in the mantle of Ronald Reagan, their biggest obstacle may be Mr. Reagan's own family. So y'all know what's been happening for the last couple of weeks. Reagan this, Reagan. And then, of course, they want to suggest that Bush is standing in the legacy of Reagan. Here is what Bush's son had to say about all this. And I quote, Reagan's son. Thank you very much. The Bush people have no right to speak for my father, particularly because of the position he's in now, Mr. Reagan said. Yes, some of the current policies are an extension of the 80s. But the overall thrust of this administration is not my father's. These people are overtly reaching, overly aggressive, overly secretive, and just plain corrupt. I don't trust these people. Back off, son. Back off, boy George. Masquerade is over. And that's it. Huh?
That's the devil criticizing Satan.
Yeah.
I mean, please.
No.
The Contras and all of that.
Oh, no. There ain't no doubt. But you know what? It's interesting when he says corrupt.
What basically is happening is like a number of the books that have come out, like by Woodward and Dean and so on and so forth. This is basically, all of these guys are pro-imperialism. They're just for what's called soft imperialism. They do not like the fact that the U.S. has overextended itself and now has put itself in a vulnerable situation.
Correct.
They're not against terrorism, international imperialism, the destruction of the ecosystem.
Absolutely.
The disintegration of the masses of people. Actually, it's their system that abides by that ideology. But they do not like it when it's to the point where they're overly unilateralist. And put themselves in a situation where it makes the empire vulnerable.
And vulnerable they are in launching their one-sided slaughter in Iraq. The deranged neocons in the Bush White House promised that the U.S. occupiers would be greeted as liberators by the Iraqi people. That's what they promised. Well, what happened? We all saw it. According to the scenario, occupied Iraq would serve as a beachhead for establishing a more pliant regimes in the region, particularly in Syria and Iran. Today, these fantasies, as Pollyannish as they were arrogant, are going up in smoke.
They ain't got a chance.
The so-called weapons of mass destruction that were the ostensible cause of this whole conflict have failed to materialize for the single reason that they don't exist. They actually had people out there looking for weapons and stuff, tearing up people's houses,
looking for the weapons of mass destruction.
Bush is now busy trying to pass the buck. Some of the president's coterie are blaming Ahmed Shalabi.
And I have to say, this is a little interesting.
Now, we know who Shalabi was and what he was about. But they're trying to blame him for hoodwinking them, for telling them basically what they wanted to hear. Convicted of embezzling funds in Jordan, Shalabi has been the recipient of millions from the Bush and Clinton administration for services rendered as their Iraqi frontman. On May the 20th, his mansion in Iraq was raided and trashed amidst accusations that he was an Iranian spy. He'd been boning them for years. 6 days later, the New York Times felt compelled, very interesting article, by the way, to finally confess that its articles, retailing stories of Hussein's supposed arsenal of weapons, weren't as, and I like this quote, rigorous as they should have been. The Times exonerates the Bush administration, blaming the false stories in its paper, at least in part on the information from a circle of Iraqi informants, defectors, and exiles bent on regime change in Iraq, and lamenting that they, along with the administration, were taken in. Now, the CIA chief, George Tenet, assigned the role of the fall guy, has resigned in the midst of a barrage of criticism of manipulating in so-called intelligence and recriminations over the September 11th attacks. Now, y'all know something? So the Times say, we didn't really investigate enough. They didn't feel the need to investigate. They just repeated the lies of the administration. They became an arm of the State Department. That's all they was doing. Like a little dummy that sits in your lap, one of them little wooden dummies. And you tap and you say, what you got to say? And you say, what you got to say? You say anything you tell them to say. But when that brother got caught, they raised hell about his ass. Got rid of him and his managers. Yeah, back when they had a little scandal. Are they going to get rid of the man that was writing the Iraq stories? That would be interesting.
The woman, Judith Miller.
Just one?
Was the main one who was hooked up with Shalabi directly.
Okay.
And this played a pivotal role in all the disinformation.
They're not getting rid of her. That's the main point I'm trying to tell y'all. On the ground in Iraq, the U.S. military has sparked widespread resistance to its savage occupation. Hoping to pacify largely Sunni Fallujah, the U.S. brought out its mothballs, a former general in Hussein's military, and installed him as a commander of the puppet Iraqi forces in the area. More recently, the Americans have been scrambling to cut a deal with the Shiite forces in Najaf under cleric Mokotata al-Sadr. Over 800 American soldiers have died in Iraq, the overwhelming majority since the U.S. government declared military victory. With its forces in Iraq stretched to the breaking point, the military announced that it would stop soldiers in units scheduled to go to Iraq or Afghanistan from leaving the service, even if their enlistments were over. This has added to an already rising disgruntlement of many soldiers and their families. Now, the government has announced that it will be moving 3,600 troops from South Korea to Iraq this summer. Their demented visions of establishing a pliant, stable Iraq in shambles. Even the central architects of the vision are beginning to allow that maybe things aren't exactly going according to plan. As Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld was forced to admit, and I love this, and I quote, "If you had said to me a year ago, describe the situation you'll be in today, 1 year later, I don't know many people who would have described it. I would have not described it in the way it happened to be today." That was from the Nation Journal, monthly Nation. 17th of May. Prominent neoconservative ideologue for the Bushites. His name is William Kristol. Now declares that Bush, and I quote, did not drive us into a ditch. No, that Bush did. He's blaming it on Bush. Oh, they like rats jumping off a sinking ship. He's trying to say Bush did it. Bush drove them into the ditch. This is also from the 7th of Nation magazine. This is a case of a rat deserting a sinking ship. After all, Kristol and his ilk gave Bush the roadmap into the ditch. They was all down with this. That's right. The horrors of the Abu Ghraib prison tortures have eroded support at home for the occupation, with polls showing mounting opposition among the American population and the presidential elections only months away. The Bush administration has been scrambling to demonstrate that it has some semblance of control in Iraq. In vain, this arrogant, war-crazed administration has even dropped its xenophobic ravings against the French, like that talk about the Freedom Prize and all that other BS. As Bush went hat in hand to Europe, trying to get him to vote for his resolution in the UN, trying to get some help, trying to get the UN to come and help him out, so he can save some face in Iraq. Specifically, the Bush administration wants support for a United Nations resolution providing a so-called democratic fig leaf for the continued neocolonial occupation of Iraq. Their whole plan is falling apart. Now it comes down to this. What are we, that is, the American working class, what are we going to do? We got him on the run. He's ducking and dodging. I say kick him right in the nuts right now. Let's finish him off and bring them damn troops home now. That's going to be all right now for the Making It Plain News Service. We'd like to thank you all very much for listening to Slave Revolt Radio.
As is clear from the situation that's going on in Iraq, to the world vision of Bill Cosby and his Sergeant Bill Cosby Water, cat who preceded him, the only thing that can help cleanse us from this educated Geechee-ism empire-building filth is water. Because water is like revolution, and humans can't, and human beings, especially black folks in this day and age, can't do without either. Until the next time, slave revolt. Out.